Right, we'll begin our meeting again this morning. And we're at item 23, Lake Paxola release of Willow and Rapid Creek with John and Jake.
Well, good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, Secretary Hepler, John Lott here, Aquatic Resources Chief. Before Jake gives his presentation this morning, I would just like to set the groundwork for it. Rapid Creek is one of the most important fisheries resources in the Black Hills. It's one that the Commission has heard about over time with regards to the fish populations, habitats, projects, trying to make the fishery more consistent and more accessible. Presentation you'll be seeing today and the discussion hopefully that will follow will focus on how important flows are as a part of the habitat in that creek and then the influence of those flows on the fish population. So with that, I'd ask Jake Davis, who's our area fisheries supervisor in Rapid City, to share his presentation with you.
All right. Thanks for that intro, John. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
All right. Sounds good. So as John mentioned, I'll be talking about Paxola Reservoir and Rapid Creek tailwater fishery below and some of the influences that the reservoir has on that downstream fishery. All right, go ahead there, Chris. So for folks that are unfamiliar with Paxola, it's located about 15 miles west of Rapid City. So this picture here, you can see the reservoir itself on the left. And then there's a small pond-type area, which we refer to as a stilling basin. It's about an acre in size. And then the creek itself flows out of that. The section that you can see in the picture here, it's about 2 miles long, and that's included in a catch-and-release regulation. So anglers must return all trout to the water, and they are restricted to artificial lures only. Now, this section of Rapid Creek, it's a very popular one, as John mentioned. We would say it's probably our highest profile fishery in the Black Hills for stream fishery, and for good reason. It produces large trout when conditions are right.
You are muted.
During our sampling, we've sampled individuals in that 12 to 13 pound class. It supports a population of wild brook trout, brown trout, rainbow trout. We do see some lake trout that are entrained through Paxola Dam. Additionally, we've seen wild tiger trout, which is one of the only locations in the Black Hills where we've observed that, tiger trout being a hybrid between brown and brook trout. Now, this area being catch and release, again, that large size structure, we still see issues with it, though. And so our standard surveys, which we do on generally an annual basis, go ahead there, Chris. What we've noticed in this area in particular, now, this graph here is from one site within a basin. A site for us is about the length of a football field. We sample it just about every year if conditions are right using backpack electrofishing to obtain our abundance and biomass estimates. The way that we do this essentially is we go to the site year after year if we can, pre-pass electrofishing, and that's how we sample our fish, get our long-term data set. Now, what you're looking at here is one site, again, in Paxola Basin below the dam. What you're seeing in the blue is actually our mean discharge, so basically the amount of water coming out of Paxola Reservoir into Rapid Creek. That's measured in cubic feet per second, so you can think of a cube of water, one by one by one, flowing by a certain point. And we have it here as our winter flow, which we define as October through March. The reason we do this is generally this is going to be the lowest amount of water that we see in an annual year coming through the reservoir into the creek. What you see in the red line is actually our trout estimates from our standard surveys. There's a black line around 28, 30 individuals on the y-axis. This is what we would consider to be a class one brown trout fishery, which would be 150 adult brown trout, which are trout over 8 inches in length. Per acre of water. A class one is what we would consider to be our best fishery, highest density. And you can see here that in an area like this, even in the absence of harvest, there's years where we sample and estimate less than 5 individuals per acre of water. So what we really see is our population is tied to our winter flows. And so because of this, it's an area that we've really focused on. We've identified it as something in our management plans that really, again, in the absence of harvest, the population is dictated by those environmental variables, the primary one being winter discharge from Pactola. So what we focused on, and unfortunately for us, is that we don't have management of water essentially in the Rapid Creek system. So what that means is Pactola itself, there's two entities that essentially have the water in Pactola Reservoir, and then Deerfield Reservoir is operated with that as well. They're operated in tandem. The city of Rapid City has the vast majority, around 49,000 acre feet, and then the Bureau of Reclamation has the remaining in Pactola, which works out to the Rapid City having about 89% of the water in those reservoirs, and the Bureau of Rec having 11%. Now, the primary uses for those water, which would be the reasons that they would release or not release water, would essentially be for municipal water or irrigation. So the concern for us is that, as you can see, sport fisheries are not really on that list, and if they are, they're far down the line. And so what that means is that we're really kind of at the mercy of what those entities want to do for releases or holding water back. So what we've seen over the years, and again, this is data going back to the early 90s, when we have what we would call a good winter year of water, which would be defined again October through March, we see 38 CFS or greater. Now, when we would see a bad year, it would be 18 CFS or later. Now, there is some significance to those amounts. The outlet structure in Pactola Reservoir, because of the design, it can only operate at either 38 or above or 18 or less. There's no happy medium in between that. What happens is when they get in there, they get some cavitation with any values in between that, say 30 CFS, and it causes some damage to the outlet structure itself. And so when operation occurs in the winter, generally if it goes under 38, it's going to instantly drop to 18 or less. Now this picture that you can see on the right is actually Rapid Creek above Rapid City. And basically what's happened is we've seen low winter flows. And in a case like this, the stream itself is almost dewatered. And so what happens is that this is really detrimental to our trout population. And the big concern for us is that if we have multiple winters like this, our trout population can really be hammered because of it. And then it takes us a number of years to build that population back, essentially. And so again, the big thing for us is getting that winter flow. Now, one of the concerns as well is that if flows are dropped, say in October, they're generally not going to be picked back up again until March or April, because what happens is if they drop them and then our winter sets in, we have ice formation in certain areas of Rapid Creek between the reservoir and Rapid City. And then if flows are increased with that ice formation, that water tends to go on top of the ice, move laterally, and then we have flooding occur in some of the homes that are in that area. So what happens is when flows are set for the winter, they're generally not going to change for several months. So we've worked with those managing entities to try and figure out ways that we can recommend more water, because our concern is that when we have multiple years of low winter flow, even in the absence of harvest, we can't provide a class one fishery, essentially. I mean, there's just not enough water and habitat there to support it. So what we did is we decided to work with some other universities, particularly South Dakota School of Mines and Technology, utilize their civil engineering department and their hydrologic modeling staff to really help us figure out, are there better ways to manage the Rapid Creek system? I mean, are there better ways that we can get more water in the winter and still meet the demands of municipalities and irrigation, those other downstream water users? So we started this a couple years ago. These are a couple examples of projects that were done in recent years. These are master's students through the university. The first one finished up in 2018. So what Mackenzie Kenny did was go out. She actually took measurements in the stream every couple feet to look at the habitat itself. We did some habitat work in 2014 and 15 where we installed root wads, boulder structures. All this was to increase stream habitat complexity, to increase habitat. So she went out and actually measured those variables and then modeled different flows. So what she did was measured them and then looked at what a brown trout, fry, juvenile, or adult needed. And then when you increase flows, what did that do to habitat? So basically what she came out with was found that as we had more water, we had increased habitat for all life stages of brown trout. But one of the big recommendations was that we saw increased habitat when we saw a minimum of 40 CFS coming through that dam and providing at least that amount of water at any time during the year. So again, we took this to BOR in the city, and one of the things that always came up in it was that, okay, so if we let more water out in the winter, how can we guarantee that Pactola is going to fill up in the spring? Because that's one of the big things that they need to see is a full reservoir. That's water that's available year-round then for downstream uses. One of the things they have in their operating plan is they want to see that reservoir full by May 1 of every year. So if they allow more water to come down in the winter, the concern is, are we going to get those spring influxes to fill that reservoir back up by May 1? So it's a crystal ball that we didn't have, but we thought we could try and get an idea with that. So that's what this project in 2019 evaluated. This master student actually went back and looked at all the water years, and then she went and modeled different operating scenarios. So what we mean by that is we let out more water at different times in the year, or we held back more water. The idea being that we use all the previous years of water years since the dam was created, a bunch of different options to see if there's a better way to use that water, provided winter water for trout, but also still met the operating needs of those managing entities. And actually what she found out, she modeled 9 different scenarios. There were better alternatives. And the preferred one in particular allowed for more water to be released during the winter and actually captured more water in the spring with runoff. And what it did was it provided for winter flows for the trout and then also had less of a chance of Pactola failing. And what we mean by a Pactola failure is essentially it drops below the dead pool. So you can think of basically a dry reservoir, which would be a worst case scenario. And so her best alternative gave us more water in the winter for trout and actually provided a better operating scenario with a less chance of Pactola failure. So again, these are just examples of work that we've done to try and build to the body of literature that would give us more water in the winter and also just better utilize the water in Rapid Creek. Now, the next study I'm going to kind of talk on, this is one that was just completed this summer. The student just defended in June, again, working with South Dakota School of Mines. And so what she did was, so we went back in the previous work and looked at the habitat itself. Looks like more water increased habitat for all life stages of brown trout. Now, this study, what it did was it went to a bigger scale and actually just looked at the stream itself. And so we kind of took the habitat out of there, just looked at basically a box of water and then what those different levels of discharge was. So what you see on this graph on the left is flow rate. So again, cubic feet per second, the amount of water, and these are all operating scenarios that we may see, 7 being by far the lowest. What you see in the next column there, that WUA, it's actually called weightable usable area, and you can think about it as kind of a habitat measure that is suited for brown trout in particular. This is a good way that we can measure changes in basically an index for brown trout suitability. And then basically you can see the increases as we go through, as we increase habitat, basically increase the amount of water, we're able to actually put a value on what does that mean for trout. And so as we move from 7 to 18, we actually see a 43% increase in brown trout suitability, which is significant. And again, as we move from 18 to 38, which is what we would be looking for our winter flows, again, we see a 19% increase. So again, that's a significant increase in potential brown trout habitat by bumping up those flows. Now, the interesting thing, when we go to 38 to 80 CFS, we do see an increase of 6%. However, that wasn't significant. It was still an increase, which we like to see, but what we really wanted to show was that the significant increases happened from either 7 to 18, or more importantly, 18 to 38. So again, what this showed was that there is a significant relationship between brown trout habitat and the flow that comes from that dam. And so these are things that we're constantly working with. Here's just another example. I mean, as you increase your flow rate, what we see is that we're continuing to get this increase in trout habitat, and there is a significant relationship there. And again, we're trying to build this with the body of literature because we don't have the ability to operate that dam and those releases specifically for trout. We're trying to get out there and show that there is a positive relationship and that it is something that should be considered when reservoir operations do occur. So this study really did a nice job of doing that. Basically, this time of year, we continue annual conversations with the City of Rapid City and the Bureau of Reclamation. We're always asking for that minimum of 40 CFS. We can look at doing habitat work in that section of Rapid Creek. We did some in 2014. We did some 2015. We've got some planned for next year. Well, that all helps. The big thing that we've teased out is if we don't get the water for those trout, there's not much we can do. I mean, that's really the driving factor in that system is those releases. We've seen it over the years where if we get into a drought scenario across the Black Hills, our trout populations have a decline. However, in a system like this, those drought conditions can be created basically any time. If those reservoir operations call for holding back a water and reducing discharge, you can create a drought scenario regardless if that's actually happening on the landscape or not. So again, these conversations happen annually. I wanted to give an update on that because it's a very high class fishery. However, it's one that if we don't get the right conditions, regardless of what kind of regulations we put on that, we can't sustain what we feel is a class one fishery in there. I want to make sure that I acknowledge our partners in this. We certainly haven't been doing this alone. South Dakota School of Mines and Technology has done a great job with their technical expertise and these grad students. We've gotten help from Western Dakota Water Development District, Black Hills Fly Fishers, and the Rapid Creek Preservation Society have all been excellent partners throughout this process. So I just wanted to give a brief update on where we're at with that. If anybody has any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer.
Jake, that's excellent report. Great work. It's on every angler's mind in the Black Hills, and you can't overstate how important this is to anglers out there and others. And they've been great partners, but I think you've been leading the charge and very persistent and done a great job. So thank you very much, and congratulations on keeping that water going. Any questions, comments? Mr. Beast,
has there been any talk about agriculture in Rapid Valley? As the town moves out, it's taking over that agricultural land, those water permits are being sold to the city of Rapid City. Has Game and Fish looked into maybe purchasing those water rights when those come up and then using that water for the wintertime flow, or has there been any thought on that?
Through the chair.
Yes. Please.
So Commissioner Beast, my understanding is Rapid Creek is very unique in that the water rights are very over allocated. And so when water rights are either up for sale or abandoned, they automatically revert to the City of Rapid. Because we have had discussions with South Dakota Department of Environment and Natural Resources about acquiring some water rights, to my understanding, but however, they all do revert to the City of Rapid just because of essentially that over allocation.
Mr. Sharp?
Thank you. Is there any scenario that's available where Rapid could become less dependent on Pactola Reservoir? I mean, whether it's drilling wells or whatever, because even 20, 30 years from now, I got to believe there's going to be some maintenance on Pactola that's going to require a lot of work on how they release water and that type of thing. So is there anything that over time there could be some kind of partnership to lessen their reliance on that?
Through the chair.
Sure, Dick.
Yes, and I couldn't speak exactly to Rapid Creek on how Rapid City, how many wells they have. I know they do have some. What I can tell you is that on an annual basis, we have what's called a Rapid Creek Water Users Meeting, which is hosted by the Bureau of Reclamation, and then the attendees are essentially all the stakeholders, including irrigation, the City of Rapid. And at that, we do get updates on when the City of Rapid in particular will be running their wells or which water treatment plants. I can tell you that there's a lot of long-term planning going on, even in the fact of investigating ways of getting Missouri River water to the City of Rapid City. So those conversations are happening, but right now, again, they still have a lot of water in those reservoirs and do use quite a bit of it, but they are looking at what the future might hold and what those potential increases for need might be.
Hey, can you remind us other possible uses, whether now or might come along, like mining and that sort of factor that could come into play here?
Sure. There certainly are cases where potential mining operations apply for permits, and there could be some uses there. There's a lot of discussion certainly about what potentially might happen in the Silver City or Rochford areas. On some of those, again, you've got other entities you start bringing in, such as the Forest Service and what they have for regulations. But there are cases where we see those requests for water coming out. It's hard to predict if that's going to increase in the future or not. And I think at least as far as mining goes, if some of these exploration mines, a lot depends on what they may find and what the future may hold for water requests from that. Now, as far as some of the other requests on an annual basis, a lot of that depends on what the precip cycle looks like. There's certainly years where downstream calls for water are higher based on what the conditions are. In some years, it's a lot more reduced. And so, again, it's hard to predict what, at least on a short-term scale, what the calls will be, say, even this next summer. And so with that, it's kind of a moving target as far as what you're trying to predict for water calls or potential uses in the future. I think the big thing that most people can agree on is that calls aren't likely to go down. It's going to be an increased demand for that finite resource. And that's been a big thing of what we're trying to do, is provide a better operating tool to essentially work with that uncertainty that exists out there in the future.
Other questions or comments? Jake, thank you again very much.